This message comes from NPR sponsor, Discover. Tired of not getting a hold of anyone when you have questions about your credit card? With 24/7 live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Hey, y'all. This is Sam's Aunt Betty. This week, what happens when you defund the police? All right, let's start the show.
You're listening to It's Been a Minute from NPR. I'm Sam Sanders. So it's been just about a year since George Floyd was killed by a police officer in Minneapolis last May. And just about a year of protests all across the nation and the world calling for police reform.
No justice!
And over that year, calls for reform have turned into calls to defund the police.
Money for the elders!
You know, so much of this conversation, of this movement, is felt national. But the kind of reform activists are asking for, a lot of it can't come from the federal government. And anyway, the U.S. Congress seems to be a bit gridlocked on that front at the moment. So today, we're going to see how the conversation around defunding the police is playing out locally. We're going to Texas. Austin, Texas. In Austin last year, there were a lot of actual calls to defund the police.
Just in the course of like 4 days, my office, which is just one of the 10 city council offices, we got 20,000 calls and emails from different Austinites asking for us to really reimagine the way that our city budget is written.
That is Greg Casada. He is a member of Austin's city council. And it turns out Austin, perhaps more than any city in the country over the last year, has gone the furthest in defunding its police department. Last summer, Greg created a plan to reduce Austin's police budget significantly, and it passed unanimously.
Things that were never possible before became what community members were demanding baseline, period, from their council members.
Councilman Casada is going to tell us what's working, what's not working yet, and whether Austin can be an example to the rest of the country on how you defund a police department. You know, by some reports, the city of Austin's police reforms are some of the biggest police reforms and most sweeping in a major city in the last few years. Can you, big picture, break down some of the key reforms and changes, maybe the biggest or a few to highlight in those reforms?
Yeah, at the heart of all of this is that cities across America, not just Austin, but Austin definitely, the biggest part of our discretionary budgets is usually policing and jails, which means that our main response to problems is essentially policing or jails. So what we did was we said, let's invest some of that money into mental health first responders. So now that when you call 911 in Austin today, you hear, do you need fire, EMS, police, or mental health? So that you can actually get a mental health responder to a call. 10% of our 911 calls are mental health calls. Or also, you know, we can take some of that money and invest it in family violence shelters to prevent domestic violence. We took some of that money and put it towards housing folks that are homeless. We need to think of public safety as something beyond how many folks of color can we arrest? How many working class people can we arrest? Gotcha. How many police do we hire?
How much money are we talking about here? How much money was shifted from Austin PD to other stuff?
Yeah, so the plan was about $100 million reduction to the police budget.
And that's out of how much of a total budget?
Just over $400 million. And so that...
So a quarter?
Oh, yes.
That's a lot.
It was significant. Now, some of it was a reduction that we could reinvest. That was somewhere in the $20 to $30 million range. The rest of it was actually just taking things that are currently in the police budget and making it an independent function because it's better suited to not actually be run by the police. So we've pulled things like that forensics lab, made it independent, made our 911 call center independent of the police department so they can send the right responder to the right call and kind of have a bias towards policing. So the biggest part of the cut was really making things separate from everything being police.
How do you measure success with these reforms? Is a measure of success fewer arrests, fewer deaths by police? Is a measure of success other things? Like, what are the metrics?
I think each program is going to have to be really held to account. A recent audit showed that Austin ranked at the very top of police shootings per capita of the big cities when you have a police officer and a mental health call. We got to come down that list. And so I think with each of these reinvestments, we've got to be able to show we did better. And if it didn't work, then we've got to reinvest the money in something else.
You know, policing is this weird issue because for years now, we've talked about it nationally and collectively, but it's an issue in which real change is made locally. You know, you're doing change to Austin policing for citizens of Austin, but you also must know that other cities and other mayors and other city councils are watching how big reforms play out in a place like Austin to see what they might do. How much do you think about that?
Yeah, I mean, I get phone calls every week from council members in other cities. And the question always comes back to, how's it going? Because folks are trying to gauge that. And I always want to be upfront with people that it's politically hard, but that it's going to take that year or two of trying it to be able to show the benefits.
When those other cities call you and talk about whether or not these Austin Police Department reforms are working and how they might do it, what advice do you give them? Perhaps advice that you wish you had gotten.
One of the pieces of advice is to really think about the void that gets created, right? And I've advised other cities to say, make sure you have what you're putting in its place available as quickly as you can. Because here in Austin, sometimes there has been that gap when we said we're going to pull back some on how many police we have, but then we're going to bring these other programs to bear. Some of those other programs to bear have sometimes taken a little too long. You know, this gun violence intervention program we really need as we see increases in gun violence. You know, we haven't gotten that in place here in Austin yet. I wish we'd gotten it in place several months ago. And so part of what I've advised is, you know, we need to make bold transformational change. And that change isn't just pulling something back, but putting better things and new things in its place and to have those things as ready as you can have them. And that's just a lesson we've learned.
Thanks again to Austin City Councilmember Greg Quesada. So the city of Austin has cut more than $100 million from its police budget. But these cuts, some of them aren't really cuts in the purest sense. Like those 911 services and the forensic lab the council member just talked about, they were just moved somewhere else in the city's org chart.
And according to the police chief, it's functioning exactly as it was before, same amount of money. It's just now there's like a new boss's boss's boss.
Is it the same staff?
Same staff.
Just a new boss boss.
Just a new boss boss.
That is Audrey McGlinchey. She reports on City Hall at NPR member station KUT in Austin. And she has a slightly different view of how police funding has changed in that city. So what's the actual real cut, maybe, if you had to guesstimate?
Yeah, I would say we cut $20 million and reallocate and spent it on other things, non-police things.
And so how does $20 million factor as a percentage of like the overall police budget?
So the police budget recently was getting up to a little over $400 million a year. Mm. So that's about 5%.
Okay, 5%. So if the headline is then Austin defunded the police by 5%. That's a whole different story, huh?
Yeah, yeah. And that's what our headline said. And it was interesting because there were different headlines even locally. And I think it was really tricky for people to understand what was happening. Because I think you really have to put these numbers into context to really get what's going on. So 5% is what they cut and spent on other things, on non-police things.
Yeah. So then I'm wondering if anybody is actually satisfied, like really satisfied with these reforms and this defunding on either side of the issue. Because it feels like if you tell the activist only 5% was cut, they're like, that's not enough. And if you tell the other side that 5% was cut, they'd say, how dare you? Is anyone really happy with this?
Not that I've talked to, and maybe that's a failure of my reporting.
No. But, tell me more.
Yeah, so I think you're right in that folks, we have various organizations here that fight for racial justice who have been asking for cuts like this for years. And a lot of those folks, you know, some of them said, okay, this is a great first step. great, awesome, next year let's cut more. A lot of folks said this is nowhere near what we wanted to see. This is not what we were asking for. We were asking for way much more than this cut from the police department. And then we had folks on the other side who, and this, you know, is the police union, the governor of Texas, folks here in Austin as well, who really felt like this was not only, I think, an insult to folks who work as police officers, but also folks were really concerned about what this would mean for public safety, what kind of effect this would have. You know, okay, if I call 911, is someone going to show up, you know, within a certain period of time? Honestly, I haven't really talked to anyone who feels like, you know, the 20 million was like the right spot to hit. Like that was kind of the number that they wanted to see. Yeah, it's really interesting. So
yeah,
folks on both sides were not happy with this move.
Huh. Yeah, yeah. What, from what you can see, has been the most difficult part of these reforms for the city so far?
I think misinformation.
Really?
Yeah, I think.
Okay, explain.
Well, just at its core, I think understanding how much was actually cut and what that means. You know, the day, I believe it was that evening after the council took this vote on the budget, that the mayor was on Facebook Live basically saying, wait, hold up. We didn't cut $150 million.
No function was ended. No function was reduced. The city council voted to not take a penny away from any of these functions.
But then we have Governor Greg Abbott, the governor of Texas, has really talked about how Austin will become a crime-ridden city, how this will have a huge effect on public safety.
If we have lawlessness in our cities caused by local decision-making policies that reduce law enforcement officers, it's going to cause chaos.
It's important to note that Austin is one of the safer large cities in Texas. And sort of with the governor's backing, there are a couple bills right now up in the state legislature, which basically they're looking at a couple bills that would punish any cities in Texas that cut police funding. And so, for example, there's one bill that would not allow a city to collect any new property tax revenue if they cut police funding. Yeah.
Wow.
I think what has frustrated local politicians who, you know, the council who voted for this unanimously, is that they feel like what their intention was has been misrepresented and the potential effects of their choices have been misrepresented. And now Austin may, and any other city in Texas, may not be able to make a decision like this again if one of these bills passes.
Yeah. Yeah. Last question for you. What should the big takeaway about policing and reform and defunding from Austin be for everybody else?
Well, here's a question I had. So okay. After a couple months after this vote was taken, there was a lot of misinformation out there about the effects of cutting money for police on crime statistics. And so I interviewed a bunch of, you know, criminal justice experts, professors, people who really look at these kinds of statistics. And there's really no provable relationship between the amount of money we spend on policing and crime statistics. But it was interesting in looking at those numbers, I was really struck by how quickly the police budget here in Austin, and I believe, you know, across, you can see this in other cities as well, how quickly it rose. So here in Austin, at least, over the span of a decade, our police budget almost doubled, which is wild. I don't think you'll find that for any other city department. And it was interesting.
Yeah.
It was interesting to note that in the middle of a public health crisis, in the middle of a pandemic, because there had been a long conversation about, wait, our budget for public health has not grown like that, and maybe we should be asking why. And so I think that's been the big takeaway, I think, for city leaders. Yeah, is what are our priorities? And frankly, when we put money behind something, we're saying it's a priority. So
exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. Do we want to
money
change
means
that?
Things.
It
that's
means
a, that's the takeaway. Money
yeah.
matters.
Yeah. Yeah. Whether you want it to or not, it really does.
Thanks again to Audrey McGlinchey. She reports on City Hall at NPR member station KUT in Austin. Coming up, I chat with comedian Michelle Buteau. We talk about the show she hosts on Netflix, The Circle. You may have heard of it. Also, we discuss traveling with small twins and playing more than just a sassy best friend.
This message comes from NPR sponsor, Discover. Here's a familiar situation. You have a question about your credit card. You call the number for help and can't get a hold of anyone. If only you had a Discover card. With 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. A real person. Get the customer service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard. This message comes from NPR sponsor, Teladoc Health. There are lots of reasons for wanting to be healthy. Family, work, living a fuller life. Teladoc Health understands. Whether you have diabetes, high blood pressure, or just need to manage your weight, Teladoc Health can help. Visit teladochealth.com/whatsyourwhy for more information. That's teladochealth/whatsyourwhy.
I'm Yoe Shaw.
I'm Kia Miakonatis.
We're the hosts of the NPR podcast, Invisibilia.
You can think of Invisibilia kind of like a sonic blacklight.
When you switch us on, you will hear surprising and intimate stories.
Stories that help you notice things in your world that maybe you didn't see before.
Listen to the Invisibilia podcast from NPR.
How are you today?
I'm good, you know.
So
I'm
when I began my chat with my next guest...
I'm going to go with good. How are you?
I was feeling a little bit jet-lagged from a work event, traveling and packing and going through airports. It is a lot more exhausting than I remembered. And my guest, she agreed.
Now I understand people that never leave the house and why it takes them so long to leave.
That is comedian Michelle Buteau.
Now it's like, and plus, like, leaving with kids, because I flew to England in October to film a circle, and I brought my twins with me, and I was like... How the do I pack up twins and go to another country?
Put twins in the suitcase, Michelle. They'll be quiet.
Look, this isn't United Air. You know what I mean?
Besides being a parent to twins, Michelle also hosts the Netflix reality competition show The Circle, the pandemic hit that just wrapped up its second season.
Welcome to The Circle, the real-life game that asks, how far would you go to be popular on social media if there were $100,000 at stake?
Also, Michelle had a recent comedy special called Utopia.
I realized way too late in life that I am an achievable Beyoncé for government workers.
And you might also recognize Michelle as Ali Wong's best friend in the movie Always Be My Maybe.
Pregnant as hell. And I am so mad at Kate Middleton. I was driving to work this morning thinking about her taking those pictures on the hospital steps, like, what, 3 hours after she had a baby? And she had that royal diaper on. You know she had that diaper on.
I don't want you to talk about that stuff in front of the customers.
Cool. You asked me a question, though. What was it?
Going to talk about Michelle's career and what she's working on and how she fits into Hollywood. But before we get there, I had to go back and get a few other things off my chest about traveling. Parents of small children, this one goes out to you. Yes. Also, they should just give all the first class seats to parents with small kids. Let y'all have that section. Let it be loud and like a daycare up there. Give y'all the free wine. I will happily sit in the back. Because I know that y'all are going through it.
You are an angel and I have been touched. Because that is... If you would have told me that 5 years ago, I'd be like, no, they shouldn't have had kids. But you know what? I'm with you. I stand. I sit.
Yes.
I kneel.
Yes.
I downward
And it's
dog.
Like, I just had this realization a few years ago. It was like, anyone who chooses to parent a child, they are literally guaranteeing the survival of our species.
Mm.
So we should be extra nice to them. They're like the reason we get to keep having humans.
Oh, my goodness. I mean, what in the Hallmark... Are you serving? What in the Christmas Lifetime movie, we've turned it over to Hulu, are you giving me? This is so
sweet. You caught me on a good day.
I'm telling you, I need to talk to you jet lag more often because you are, I'm ready to put a $5 bill in the basket. Where's the tambourine?
Wow.
This is nice.
Wow.
We're going to church.
Let me send you my Cash App. My goodness. Anyway. We are here to talk about a show that you've already mentioned, The Circle. Now, first, before I have you describe what this show is to our listeners, I want to say you mentioned that you traveled to London with your twins to film The Circle.
Yeah.
And one of the things that gave me the most pause about season one, which I enjoyed so much, y'all shot it in London, but all the B-roll looked like Chicago.
You know what? Okay, so many things about this statement. First of all, I said England. I ain't say London. What I love
oh,
is that...
Sorry.
Okay. I'm going to tell you, though, because when you think of England, you should think
That's
of London.
That's all I think of.
That's all anyone yeah. thinks of, and they're right. We shot... No shade to Manchester United. Big up. But we shot in Manchester, which is, you know, I can't even say London light. It's its own thing. But, you know, it's a smaller town. And, yeah, this is the thing about the production company and their creative mind. This is already a very popular show in the UK. And they are very smart because they're just showing you very happy, basic Americana yes. real estate. So you don't ever yes. know where we are. You just know that, you know, you're hanging out with Americans.
I literally was like, oh, they shot The Circle in Chicago. So cool. Where was season two shot?
I know. It's movie magic.
So season two, are y'all in London for that one too? Or not, like, Lord God, Manchester.
See, I know. I know. Trust me. Trust me. Yes, we are. And, yeah, we flew to Manchester safely. It was wild because there was no vaccine to be had back then. So we were just wearing our plus size hazmat suits and getting tested regularly and like wow. a straight up quarantine, like a vintage quarantine at this point where
you an old school 2 weeks in the hotel room.
Yes. Yes, honey. We had food delivered to our door. It felt like I was Tom Hanks in Castaway. But I was gaining weight. I was like, okay.
So for folks listening who haven't watched The Circle yet, how would you describe this show to them?
Oh, my goodness. If I describe the show, they're not going to watch it. It's like you have to watch it. So The Circle is an amazing reality competition show where people are quarantined in these apartments in a building and they are vying for $100,000. And in order to win, they have to become the most popular in the ratings. And they can either play themselves or catfish.
But they can't see or hear each other. The only way they get to know each other is through a voice-activated platform called The Circle.
And all those things sound crazy, I know. But if you watch the show, you'll understand. And another very important thing is people go in with strategy, right? They have this game plan. But much like mm-hmm. life, you could have a plan. But look, once you out hey, listen, there, you never know.
Who knows what's going to happen.
Exactly.
Yes. Exactly. I wonder, okay, what kind of character would you be on The Circle? Would you be you? Would you take on a different persona? Would you be strategic? Would you keep it real? I wonder.
You know what? I'm a basic bitch, to be honest. Like, I spend so much time trying to figure out how to communicate effectively. Yeah. So yeah. I'd have no choice but to be me. And, like, look, I feel like I'm polarizing as I'm like cilantro. Like, either you love it or you taste soap. So I would either win the whole damn thing or I'd be like the first one blocked. I'd have to pack my knives and go.
I love it.
Who would you be?
You know,
what would you do?
This is what I wonder. I try to think of, like, what type of person in the culture is universally revered, loved, and respected. Grandmothers. Could I pretend to be like a nice granny?
Ooh.
Who's just fun and wants to be hip with the kids? I feel like that kind of contestant has to win a show like The Circle, right?
I feel like you're giving me Dionne Warwick vibes right now on Twitter.
Right?
How could we not?
Right? Because we all love Dionne Warwick. I'm saying, grandma's on the internet, a beautiful thing all the time. That would be how I present myself on a show like The Circle.
Somebody got a comedy producing job at The Circle.
Let me in, y'all. I'm ready for that Netflix money. Come on. You know, you don't just do The Circle on Netflix. I've seen you in a few Netflix movies. You've got your Netflix comedy special that came out, I believe, last year. You are Miss Netflix. I see you a lot, and I love it. And you actually told my friend and colleague, Lulu Garcia Navarro, that you didn't really see a place for yourself in comedy before streaming platforms. What do you mean by that?
I mean, you know, I was auditioning a lot and people loved me, but I was always the sidekick or the friend or like the friend you like take to lunch the next day and tell them about your sexcapade the day before. And with streaming, not just Netflix, but Hulu, Amazon Prime, BET Plus, honey, you have a license to do something a bit more body positive, sex positive, conscious. And you know, it isn't as cookie cutter. And so I feel like I definitely felt more worthy and in my own skin by booking these jobs where I can be topless and do something else besides, you know, he said, what, girl? Like at a brunch. So that was life-changing for me.
You know, hearing you talk about that sometimes trope of, like, the sassy sidekick, is there a place and time in which you say, never doing that again? Or is it still, like, a part of your repertoire, perhaps?
I don't know. I say never say never. Because, you know, I'm not that absolute. I am not Chrissy Teigen. I'm not going to be like, I quit Twitter and then come back.
And then she came back.
And then you got like twice. You know what I mean? I'm not going to be like Elton John and be like, I'm retiring, but here's this tour. I'm not like that. I'm more like a Whoopi Goldberg, Joan Rivers type of bitch where I'm just like slow, steady, rinse the race. And so I am here forever and all of time. You know, I am the Puerto Rican Betty White. I want to be in adult diapers on SNL being shuffled around the set being like, I still got jokes.
Coming up, Michelle Buteau and I play my favorite game, Who Said That?
This message comes from NPR sponsor BetterHelp. When you keep your stress bottled up, it can eat away at you. Therapy is a safe space to get things off your chest and to figure out how to make them better. Try BetterHelp Online Therapy, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Get it off your chest with BetterHelp at BetterHelp.com/NPR today to get 10% off your first month.
This message comes from NPR sponsor REI Co-op. REI has gear, clothing, classes, and advice for camping and glamping, biking and hiking, axing and snacksing, backpacking, and another outdoor thing that rhymes with backpacking. Visit your local REI co-op or REI.com for the million and one ways you can opt outside.
This message comes from NPR sponsor Homes.com. You don't just live in your home, you live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, local amenities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
This message is brought to you by NPR sponsor Progressive Insurance. You call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. Now you can call them on your auto insurance, too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. Tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options within your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
This message comes from NPR sponsor Progressive Insurance, where drivers who switch could save hundreds on car insurance. Get your quote at Progressive.com today. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates.
You're listening to It's Been a Minute from NPR, and I am joined this week by a guest whose work I really enjoy, who you have seen all over the place. Tell folks who you are.
Oh, my goodness. Ow, it's Michelle Buteau. How y'all doing? So hope you're watching The Circle. If you're not watching The Circle, I hope you're reading my book, or at least listening to the audiobook, Survival of the Thickest, Plus-Size Essays in a Small-Minded World. And look, if you are a woke white person and you want to talk to your black friends about the black content that you just saw, go on over to BET Plus, that's right, and just sign up for a little $9.99 and support some black creators and watch First Wives Club Season 1 because Season 2 is coming out soonsies, and you can watch all the reruns of Martin. And who don't love some Tyler Perry? I can go on and on and on, but I will not.
This is good. This is good. I like that elevator pitch for Michelle. All right, it's time for a game. This game is called Who Said That?
Ooh, who said that?
It's really simple. I share three quotes from the week of news, and you got to tell me either who said it or what kind of story we're talking about.
Okay.
I'll give you a bunch of hints. Just yell out the answer when you have it. And because it's just you playing this week, no matter what, you're going to win. Here we go. First quote.
Okay.
Wow. Just so detailed. You've got the rounds of my breasts. Who said that?
Angela from 90 Day Fiancé.
I wish. This is a daytime TV star who just had her wax figure revealed at Madame Tussauds this week.
Oh, Miss Wendy Williams, how you doing?
Yes, yes. Miss Wendy Williams, daytime talk show gossip queen. She met her own wax figure on her show this Monday. And according to a representative on the show, it's taken over 20 artists, over 800 hours, and the wax figure traveled over 3,000 miles across the Atlantic on a cargo ship. And when Wendy Williams saw her wax figure, she said, "Wow, just so detailed, you've got the rounds of my breasts."
Oh, my goodness.
We stan. We stan.
Oh, my goodness. This is the reason why Cyndi Lauper wrote that song, I Drove All Night. That is amazing. Can you imagine the round of Wendy's breasts employed people for hours upon end?
She just gives and
in
gives
this
and
economy?
Gives.
I mean, what can't she do now? What can't right? she do?
You got that point. Here is the next quote. For this quote, you are going to fill in the blank. Here's the quote.
Okay.
We continue to believe that the blank is committed to meaningful reform. However, change of this magnitude takes time and work, and we feel strongly that the blank needs time to do it right. This is some scuttlebutt about an award show that is maybe going away.
Oh my goodness. I really wanted to say the patriarchy, but it's the Golden Globes. And I'm just like, isn't that the same? What's the difference?
Same diff. Yes, yes, yes. So that statement was issued by NBC this week. And the blank is the Hollywood Foreign Press Association, or the HFPA. That is a group that puts on the Golden Globe Awards. And the HFPA has been in trouble lately because apparently they don't have any black members. And there's been a lot of reporting around institutional and structural problems. Basically, the idea that the HFPA and the Golden Globes are kind of pay for play. And the studios and networks that spend the most to wine and dine these foreign press members see their movies and their shows win. I think it was most glaring this past cycle when the HFPA gave zero nominations to Michaela Cole's I May Destroy You. And gave two nominations to one of the worst reviewed shows ever, Emily in Paris.
Oh my God. You know what? I just need to do a child's pose and a downward dog for that one. I mean, yeah. The work will not stop in my lifetime. It's like so many steps. It's recognizing that it's there and it's real. And it's not just your PTSD or your insecurity or just like, why not me? Mm-hmm. It's the step of convincing other people that it's real. It's exhausting. And then it's like, what are we going to do about it? Like, everyone needs their Brad Pitt in 12 Years a Slave, an ally, and, you know, to be like, help me get it. You're in. Help me get in and figure out how to do it.
Exactly. Exactly. So on top of NBC saying they are not going to air the Golden Globes next year, other big players like Netflix, Amazon, and Warner Media have all agreed to cut ties with the HFPA. And this one just made me giggle. Tom Cruise sent back his three Golden Globes in protest.
Which is like the
That'll
richest
fix them,
thing.
Tom.
I know. It's like the richest thing to do. You know what I mean? It's just like, it's like the king giving away one of his islands. And it's just like, thank you so much. That's so nice.
I'm
but like
now,
look, Tom.
He's doing something.
Tom is Tom. But you know he adopted all them kids, and one of those kids is half black, so you know he at least knows about texture.
He gets it, yes.
So that's nice. Hey, Connor, can't wait to see you DJ in Australia one day.
I'm like now imagining Tom Cruise juggling his three Golden Globes while jumping on Oprah's couch. That's my mental image right now.
I mean, that's a lot going on. Definitely don't have spicy food tonight. You know what I mean? You're going to have dreams.
Yeah. Last quote. This is a good one, and I can't wait to hear you talk about it. Who is this quote about? It's natural between them, and the chemistry is unreal. They picked up where they last left off and are enjoying each other's company right now. You know.
Look, what are we talking about? Benjamin Franklin, Benjamin Button, Ben Harper, Ben Stiller. Who's the Ben?
Who's the Ben?
You know
who it is. Tell our folks who it is.
Yes, honey, it is the infamous couple Bennifer.
How do you feel? It has rocked my world, Michelle, in ways that I didn't expect. This news that Jennifer Lopez and Ben Affleck are back together has taken Sam Sanders back to, like, 2003.
Yeah.
I felt the same feelings that I felt 17 years ago about these people who do not matter in my daily life. Explain this to me. Why do we care so much?
Oh, Lord. You know, I think, number one, nostalgia, really.
Yeah.
I think, too, because they're so wildly and weirdly beloved.
Yeah.
And have really just made their own path in such different ways.
Beloved in different ways.
Yes.
Like, we love J-Lo because she is this queen who rules the world. And we kind of, in this way that we feel sorry and yet love Ben Affleck because he's like the saddest divorced dad.
Yes, and also a part of our childhood. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm,
he's just like the white boy that we're all friends with, a dude like Ben Affleck. The white boy that's tall, that can reach the stuff off the shelf and pay for a round.
And it's like, I gotta like tip my hat to Ben Affleck's old school swag. Apparently, he got back into J-Lo's good graces by sending her emails. Like old school emails. He didn't hop in the DMs. He didn't text.
Like
he
big,
sent emails.
Yeah, Big and Carrie at the end of
the first
movie. Yeah.
He's old school. They were seen together in Montana where they vacationed, just the two of them, for about a week. Whatever Ben Affleck is putting down, J-Lo's picking it up. And I will say, I bless that union. J-Lo and Ben giving you good nostalgic vibes. Also, Ben Affleck, at some point, release the emails. We want to know what you did to get J-Lo back, because that might be some skills that I can apply in my personal life.
Look,
okay, Ben? Share the emails.
Look.
On that note, Michelle, congratulations. You won the game.
Come on.
Of course.
Thank you.
It was such a joy to talk to you. I enjoy seeing you on all the streaming platforms. Michelle, come back and we'll do it again soon.
I can't wait.
Thanks again to comedian Michelle Buteau. You can catch The Circle and her comedy special Butopia on Netflix.
Now it's time to end the show as we always do. Every week, listeners share the best thing that happened to them all week. We encourage folks to brag, and they do. Let's hear a few of those submissions.
Hey, Sam. This is Kyra from New Orleans. And the best thing that happened to me this week is that I graduated from vet school, and I am officially Dr. Kelly.
Hi, Sam. The best part of my week was watching my 17-year-old daughter get her black belt in Taekwondo. I am so proud of her, and I couldn't be more happy.
Hey Sam, this is Ambika Acharya, and the best part of my week was getting to eat an 8-course meal of dishes inspired by Sola El Whaley that my roommate and friend Sharon prepared for my birthday. Sharon, you're the best.
My best thing this week was the look on my parents' face when my brothers and I managed to surprise them for their 50th wedding anniversary. We haven't all been together in the same place in about 3 years, so being able to walk into the house was spectacular.
Hey Sam, my name is Hannah, and the best part of my week was passing my driving knowledge exam. I don't turn 16 for another few months, but I am just one step closer to getting my driver's license and living my Olivia Rodrigo fantasy of driving through the suburbs and crying because you weren't around.
Hey Sam, it's Grace and Mila. We're two high school seniors from Seattle, Washington, and we're finishing up our last year. It's been super stressful, but we finally figured out our college plans to celebrate one of this backpacking trip to the coast, and we finally got out of our heads and have just gotten excited for the future. So I just wanted to thank you.
This show is like the highlight of our weeks, and
we look forward to it every single week.
Yeah, have a good week, everyone. Yeah.
Thanks to all those listeners you heard there. Dr. Kelly, congrats. Christine, Ambika, Aaron, Hannah, and Grace and Mila. You know, hearing one of our listeners mention Olivia Rodrigo, the teen singing sensation, kind of helped me realize that the best part of my week this week is one of her new songs. It's called Deja Vu.
Do you get deja vu when she's with you? Do you get deja vu?
It's stuck in my head. Didn't expect that, but I like it a lot. So thanks, Olivia. All right, listeners, don't forget you can share the best part of your week at any point throughout any week. Just record yourself and send that voice memo to us via email. That email address is samsanders@npr.org. All right, this week, It's Been a Minute was produced by Janae West, Andrea Gutierrez, Sylvie Douglas, and Liam McBain. Our fearless editor is Jordana Hochman. Our director of programming is Steve Nelson. Our big boss is NPR's senior VP of programming, Anya Grundman. All right, listeners, till next time, be good to yourselves. I'm Sam Sanders. We'll talk soon.
This message comes from NPR sponsor Mint Mobile. From the gas pump to the grocery store, inflation is everywhere. So Mint Mobile is offering premium wireless starting at just $15 a month. To get your new phone plan for just $15, go to mintmobile.com/switch. This message comes from NPR sponsor Shopify, the global commerce platform that helps you sell and show up exactly the way you want to. Customize your online store to your style. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/NPR.
All that sitting and swiping, your body is adapting to your technology. Learn how and what you can do about it.
I really felt like the cloud in my brain kind of dissipated. Once I started realizing what a difference these little bricks were making, there's no turning back for me.
Take NPR's Body Electric Challenge. Listen to the series wherever you get your podcasts.